Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the studio for the second half of the show today is Tom Moyer with the Citizens Climate Lobby. Welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So for those who might not be familiar with the Citizens Climate Lobby, let's start with a brief synopsis of who you are.
Sure. We're a national group, actually an international group, working primarily to bring, at least in the U.S., bring Democrats and Republicans together on the issue of climate change.
Sounds like a big job right now.
It's a huge job.
But progress has been made.
Yeah, unbelievable progress. So we've been effectively stalled on bipartisan climate policy for the last decade, and that logjam is breaking now.
And tell us a little bit about kind of how that's moving right now.
So we just had a bill introduced in Congress in the lame duck session. It's called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It's got three Republican co-sponsors and three Democratic co-sponsors right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how would this act work?
Is essentially the proposal that Citizens Climate Lobby has been working on for the last decade or so. It's a carbon fee placed on carbon-based fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, with the proceeds rebated to American taxpayers in the form of dividend checks.
And so, you know, is this gaining a lot of popularity? What's the early kind of buzz about this?
So, I mean, the early buzz, our chances of passing this in the immediate short term are zero, right? It's the lame duck session. It's not going to get heard on the floor.
Right.
It's going to get reintroduced in January in the new Congress. And then we'll see how people want to proceed or how it's being introduced in the House, right? So this is going to be up to the Democratic Party in January. There are competing proposals now from the Democrats. There's a lot of buzz about the Green New Deal, right? There's no actual proposal associated with that. There's no legislation. But this is a marker right now by the co-sponsors for bipartisanship, saying Republicans and Democrats can do this. This is a serious, meaningful proposal to reduce emissions. It's going to reduce, it'll reduce emissions by about 45% by 2030.
Wow.
And that's not an aspiration. That's not a target. Mm-hmm. That's economic modeling from the policy.
And then there's this really interesting aspect of the policy where the American people, you know, you and I would receive a dividend check, right?
Right.
That's gotta help sweeten the pot, right? I mean,
yeah, our theory and most of the legislators we talk to agree that once people start receiving dividend checks, this legislation is going to be extremely popular. And it's modeled after the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Right.
If you talk to Alaskans about taking away their Alaska Permanent Fund checks, you'll get shot.
But then there's also, like, then do people want to continue to have oil and gas development because they're getting a check? Do we suddenly have every American lobbying for increased fossil fuel use?
Right. So that's the beauty of it, is a million individual decisions in everybody's own economic self-interest add up to lower emissions. So you might wish for Rocky Mountain Power to keep burning coal all you want, but if it's in their interest to switch to cleaner energy, they're going to do it.
And that's how this is designed.
Exactly. And then okay. It won't matter how much electricity you use in your house. You can cut back or not. Mm-hmm. You make your own choice.
Okay. So the Citizens Climate Lobby, it was based on the fact that you have bipartisan Republicans and Democrats working together, coming together on creating solutions. Now, there are a lot more Democrats in the House of Representatives, of course, so they'll be the majority party. But you lost quite a few Republicans in the CCL. Is that correct? Mia Love, for example.
Yeah, so we need to distinguish between Citizens Climate Lobby and the Climate Solutions Caucus.
Okay.
In Congress. So we were instrumental in getting the Climate Solutions Caucus started.
Okay.
And bringing Republicans and Democrats together in that caucus to talk to each other about climate change. And that caucus has introduced more than one piece of legislation, but this is the one that we've been targeting.
That's the one. Oh, okay. So the Climate Caucus is a separate issue. It's still ongoing.
Right.
But they've lost a few members. They've got to find more Republicans
exactly.
to join
it's,
that.
It's currently pending the new Congress taking their seats at 45 Republicans and 45 Democrats.
Okay.
But more than half of the Republicans either lost their seats or retired in this last election.
Interesting.
Including Carlos Curbelo, who was one of the co-founders from Florida, and including Mia Love, who was the only representative from Utah.
So now the challenge is to find, because it, you designed this right to be, it has to be an equal number from each party, right?
Right.
So the challenge is to find who who will fill those seats.
So it needs to be remembered that we were in this at a much lower level. We were in the same situation after the previous election, the 2016 elections. We were unbalanced. There were something like 9 Democrats and 6 Republicans at the time after that election. And Mia Love was actually the 7th Republican to join. And she joined without a Democratic partner to bring the numbers back towards equal. So yeah, we hope some of the new incoming Republicans are going to be willing to talk on climate change now.
What's your sense at all of what's going on in the Senate? Are there senators who might support this act, this Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, or may they bring a modified proposal to the House?
There. I don't know any of the individual details, but Lindsey Graham is the senator who's been most outspoken on the need to do something about greenhouse gas emissions.
Really?
Yeah, quite surprisingly. And this is not new. Lindsey Graham's been talking about this for a decade, right? He just, along with the rest of the Republican Party, he just put this on the back burner for a long time because it wasn't going anywhere. So I don't know if this is the specific form of the legislation he would support.
Right.
Or not. We'll have to find that out. And there are people in his state who are talking to him who have a much clearer idea about that than I do.
Interesting.
The other one who's of great interest now is Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And do you have any sense of where he might fall on these concepts?
He's made some of the most aggressive public statements, aggressive in the good direction, on the need to do something about climate change and our ability to do something about climate change.
Well, that's very encouraging. Again, we were talking with the Union of Concerned Scientists about the 4th National Climate Assessment Report. 13 government agencies were authors, co-authors of that report. You know, and that means there's 13 agencies, departments, et cetera, who understand that climate change is happening and there's impacts occurring right now. The only one that doesn't seem to understand is the White House, but it looks like with a Democrat-controlled House, that's encouraging with respect to climate change-related measures and bills that might be introduced within the House. But it's the Senate that has to the real work will have to be done to win them over.
Well, I mean, the real work is in the national conversation.
Yeah.
We know nothing like this happens overnight. You have to introduce it. You have to have the conversations. You have to build the consensus. We won't pass meaningful climate legislation without support from the Republican Party. And that's going to be true now, and it's going to be true after 2020. It's going to be true after 2022. We have to have Republicans on board.
Okay. That's cool. What's going on with Citizens Climate Lobby on a local basis? Is there local initiatives that you follow or efforts?
There are. So we haven't talked about it. I don't think I've been on your show since the last legislative session.
No.
But we passed in the Utah legislature a climate resolution.
Right.
In the last session. It's called the HCR 7, the Economic and Environmental Stewardship Resolution. So we passed that with about a 2/3 majority in the House and almost overwhelmingly in the Senate. In fact, the only no votes in the Senate were Democrats.
Why was that? Wasn't
it didn't go far enough.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was a compromise resolution.
Yeah.
It was, and it's just a resolution, but yet that's baby steps, because 2 years ago, it wouldn't even come out of the committee.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So it's slowly making its way. Then, so what's the next step beyond resolution? There might be a bill.
Yes, there is a bill. There actually was a bill last session as well, but we didn't emphasize it because we wanted to focus on the resolution.
Resolution.
And get that statement that we actually do need to reduce emissions codified in Utah legislation, which it is now. So the bill is similar to the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividends Act at the state level. It applies a tax on carbon-based fuels, and instead of rebating the money as dividend checks to taxpayers, it rebates it as tax cuts.
Okay.
So again, a benefit to the citizens of the state of Utah.
Right. So they're actually, the difference between the two, the tax cuts almost add up to the revenue generated, and the difference is spent on air quality programs.
Okay. So that's coming this year.
That is coming this year.
Look for that bill, proposed bill.
Yeah, the current or last session's version of it was called House Bill 403.
Mm-hmm.
It'll have a new number coming out in a few weeks.
Okay.
But yeah, that's ongoing.
Okay.
So give us a little more detail on how the taxing of these fossil fuels actually is structured, both for the Utah proposal and the national proposal.
You mean how it's actually implemented, how the the state goes about
doing it? Yeah, exactly.
So the beauty of it is when you tax the fuels themselves, there's only a few places you have to tax them. So you're doing this as far upstream in the economy as possible. So essentially at the point of production or the point of import, if they're coming into the United States. So at the mine, at the well, at the port, and you don't have to worry about people's behavior at the gas pump. It's the fuel's already taxed, long since. So you'll see the increased price when you pay for your fuel at the gas pump.
Right, so I will see it at the pump in some form.
But no one needs to know how much fuel you're buying.
Okay.
That's a good point. So does the tax like ramp up over, you know, that rate? Does that increase over time? Does it start at a lower, maybe more approachable number?
Yeah. So the federal bill, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, starts at $15 a ton, which is about 15 cents on a gallon of gasoline.
Mm.
Okay.
And then it increases by $10 a ton per year.
Okay.
So that's a fairly aggressive rate of increase.
That's 10 cents per gallon, roughly.
Per year.
Per year.
So that means after a decade or so, you're paying about $1 a gallon more for fuel. But on average, if you're an average consumer, you're getting that much back in your dividend check. If you are a lower than average consumer, if you're particularly clean, you're going to get more back in your dividend check than you spent on increased costs.
Right. Okay.
If you're if you have a high carbon footprint, you're going to get less back in your dividend check than you spent. It's going to cost you money, and it should.
Okay.
Right. That's the reasoning behind it, right?
It should cost you money to pollute.
Yep.
So Nell and I will get the same check per se.
Right.
But I might, let's say consume.
Because of your wasteful ways.
Yeah, I might consume 50 gallons of gas a week, whereas Nell only consumes 5 gallons of gas a week, but we end up getting the same dividend check.
Exactly.
She wins, I lose.
Exactly. You're effectively subsidizing.
I get it.
Her reduction of emissions.
Okay.
If you choose to do that.
Yeah. Well, my goal is then to use less and get Nell to use more.
Exactly. In your own self-interest.
That's who I am.
It's the beauty of capitalism.
But no, that's how the dividend would work.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was just going to say, if people are interested in getting involved in some of these efforts, whether that's lobbying or education, how do they do that?
So you can join Citizens Climate Lobby. You can go to citizensclimatelobby.org and just fill out the form and put your name and email address in, and then you'll start getting emails from us. We have 6 chapters around the state, one of which is in Park City. And our next Park City chapter meeting is Thursday, December 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Kimball Junction Library. And we're actually going to have Representative Tim Quinn as our guest at that meeting.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
This is what we do. We talk to our representatives about climate change.
Right.
And a lot of what we do is training our members to lobby, to be citizen lobbyists.
To have those conversations without letting them get too
passionate.
Confrontational.
That too.
Another one.
Confrontation doesn't get the job done.
Yeah.
No, being compelling does.
Yeah. In persuasiveness
fact,
does.
Okay. So that's Thursday, December 20th at Kimball Junction Library
at 6:30 p.m.
6:30. Okay. Citizens Climate Lobby. Tom Moyer, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Really always good to see you.
And the website.
CitizensClimateLobby.org.
Okay, perfect.